so it goes.
Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
So it goes. And so it goes. And so it goes. And so it goes.
You need some whoop 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 boing. You know?
Absolutely.
So it goes. And so it goes. And so it goes. And so it goes.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the, what is it, Greg?
The No Sour Fun Time Ha Ha Power, whatever.
You screwed it up. I finally say it right. The
You're
No Sour
so
Ha Ha
mean.
Fun Time Power Hour.
You're so mean.
I'm not mean.
You're mean in the 1 o'clock hour.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. That is Greg Bach. She is Jane Matinair. Coming up at 1:30, we're going to be talking about the anti-woke Joe Rogan Comedy Club.
And how I've never wanted to punch my computer more.
Yeah, exactly. The antithesis of what that even creates is as far as comedy is supposed to challenge you, but how does it challenge you if you're only talking to people who already agree with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. We'll talk about that at 1:30, but right now... I read about this UW-Madison project a couple months ago now called the Public History Project, and it sounded really interesting to me. It's a multi-year effort to uncover and give voice to those who experienced, challenged, and overcame prejudice on the UW-Madison campus. So here to tell us more about the project, its origin, and its goals is Casey Lucchini-Busher, a public historian, an award-winning museum curator, and the director of the Public History Project. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so happy to have you. So this is, I have not seen it, but it sounds fascinating. And so beyond the kind of brief description I just gave that I took from the website, what is, in your words, the Public History Project?
Yeah, so the Public History Project began in 2019, and our mandate, our mission was pretty simple. You know, the main idea is that there are lots of histories about UW-Madison that we talk about often, right? We have a lot of celebratory narratives, so many incredible things have happened here, but that's not the full history of this place. There are lots of people who've been left out, whose stories haven't been told, and whose stories, quite frankly, haven't even been researched. And so we were asked to kind of start this project to look at a bigger, truer, fuller history of UW-Madison. So we look at 175 years of the university's history. We look at all different forms of discrimination, racial and ethnic discrimination, discrimination against LGBTQ folks, folks with disabilities, religious discrimination, gender discrimination. And really, we also look at resistance, right? Like, it's not a very accurate story to say that all this discrimination happens and nobody does anything. So we're really always looking at, you know, not only discrimination, but resistance and this big, broad history. And our big goal is to make that accessible to people. So, you know, we're not the type of historians who come in and publish it in a book and then help a few people read it. We're really looking at how can we get the most people access to this information.
And so we'll get to how it's being presented in a minute, but I guess what was kind of the origin? So it started in 2019, but what was kind of like, because that was before, I mean, if we talk about 2020 being such a big year for a lot of conversations around race and discrimination and stuff. So this predated that. So what was kind of the motivating factor for the project?
Yeah, it came out of a study that was released in 2018 that detailed two student organizations at UW-Madison in the 1920s who bore the name of the Ku Klux Klan. And that was a well-known history. It was published about for the first time in 1993 in the Wisconsin Magazine of History. And there's lots of evidence that generations of students and faculty and staff knew about these student orgs, but never really did anything, right? Never confronted this history, never talked about this history. But following the violence in Charlottesville in 2017, then Chancellor Rebecca Blank commissioned a committee of historians and community members to look at this history and then give recommendations to the university. And one of their recommendations was this project.
Oh, interesting. So have other universities done something like this, that this was a recommended approach?
Yeah, it's interesting. So other universities do this kind of critical history of their institution. So people listening might have heard of Harvard or UVA or Georgetown, who've all looked at their university's histories with slavery. The thing that kind of makes our project wholly unique is that we look at the whole history of the university. We look at lots of different forms of discrimination, and we focus on these public products. So these other universities tend to have a bounded research question, right? Like, we're only going to look at our history of slavery, which allows you to kind of ignore some other forms of discrimination and exclusion in the 20th century, for example. But also they result in books or journal articles, which, you know, or reports. And some of the reports are like 100, 200, 300 pages. And we know that our students won't read that. they'll say they will, but they won't. And, you know, we won't either as like adults or faculty or staff, right? Like it's that kind of time where our attention is so split. And so we were really thinking about like, how can we get this information to people in a way that they'll want to receive it, that will be interesting, that they can actually engage with it? Because for us, it wasn't just this academic pursuit. Like it wasn't just research for research sake. It was really, let's do this. Let's start this kind of reckoning process. And maybe if we're honest about our past, if we confront that past, we can create some culture change.
And we're talking to Casey Lucchini Butcher, who is the director for the Public History Project, which is a multi-year effort at UW-Madison to confront and show all the different challenges and experiences and of prejudice on the campus over 175 years. And so I guess, as you were just saying, it's not in a book. It's not research for research's sake. So can you kind of paint a picture of how it's demonstrated for people to experience and learn?
Yeah. So I'm a public historian, which is very confusing to all my family members, to most people that I meet. But I just, at the most simple, I make history accessible for the public. So for this project, what we decided to do was to really think about, okay, how will just the average person want to receive this information? So we did a physical exhibit that was on display at the Chazen Museum of Arts in the fall. So it was up September through December 23rd. If you're sitting here and you're listening, you're like, okay, it's down, don't worry. Everything that was physically in the exhibit is available online at reckoning.wisc.edu. So we have this kind of immersive digital presence where you can go through these stories, but you can also see primary sources from our UW archives. You can actually kind of like dabble in the historical documents. We had a huge events and public programming slate. A lot of those events happened during the pandemic, so they're recorded. So if you like start digging around, you really like our project, you can watch our old recordings. We also are in classrooms on campus all the time. So I'm teaching in a class later this afternoon about the history of women's resistance on campus. So we're always kind of in classes, talking with students. We teach courses about this history. And we really are just constantly thinking, you know, what are these creative ways that we can get this history out there? So one of the things that was kind of a cool partnership is we worked with First Wave, which is a hip hop scholars program on campus. And we had students create spoken word pieces about history in the exhibit. One of those pieces was read at a student night when the exhibit was up, and then a dance instructor had turned it into a dance.
Oh,
so like
wow.
That premiered this spring. Wow. So like, we're always like, okay, yes, it's history. And people think of history as books or like old dusty archives, but it doesn't need to be that. Like people learn history all the time in really interesting ways.
And Casey, I have to say, I don't know about anybody else, but you completely hooked me when you said dabbling in our documents. I am absolutely there for that.
Dabbling in documents.
Old,
you know, we
Jane
have over 300
dabbling things,
so they're all on there. So if you like old stuff, we got a lot of that.
What was that website again that we could
it's
find?
Reckoning.wisc.edu.
Wisc, there we go.
And we'll put that in the show notes for today. But I guess as you are the director of this project, what are some of like your favorite stories? Like what are some of the things that you've, I'm sure there's a lot because 175 years is a lot, but I guess what are some of the ones that really stick out as the most interesting or the most pivotal?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to like look at projects like this and histories like this and focus on the negative. And it was interesting. I know you guys were like talking about like doomer stuff right before this. And it's there, right? And we felt an obligation to tell those histories. Like we have to be frank, blackface and minstrelsy was really popular on campus. Mm. We had student groups that were working with the Klan on campus. Like it's important to be honest about those. But when I came in and started doing the research, there were just so many moments where students who, by the way, are not here to be rebels, right? They're here to get an education and hopefully leave and do something with that education. But students come here and they care enough about this institution to fight to change it. And so seeing these different instances of students like rebelling was great. I'm teaching, like I said, in this course this afternoon about feminist protests on campus. And there was a woman who taught some of the earliest feminism courses at UW, and she got denied tenure. And it was very clear that she was denied tenure because of her political leanings. Mm. And the women students who supported her, they locked the tenure committee in a room, made them listen to like a guerrilla art piece called The Terror of Tenure. Afterwards, they let them leave, but they dumped water on them, including the UWPD chief of police. They smeared lipstick all over them. And like the women were painted as like these monsters in the press, right? Like, this is young women of this age. This was in the early 70s. Like, can you believe these are the bra burners, right? And to me, I'm like, yes. The first time I read it, I was like, I love these women. This is incredible.
Can I buy them lunch? I don't know. They're amazing.
I'm like, they were smearing lipstick on these like older tenured men who were just like appalled that women would act this way on campus, right? Like, it wasn't very ladylike. But I loved that, you know, just stories like that where you see the way that students are kind of building these movements together, and they're pushing back both against structures, but also against individuals, and like calling out kind of some of the farce of the university.
That is, oh man. So as of right now, the only way to do the experience is online. The exhibit is over. Is there any plans to have anything be a physical exhibit in the next?
Yeah. So,
okay, go ahead.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the project was short term, but we were really excited that the university decided to continue the effort. So we're actually going to be transitioning this summer to the Rebecca M. Blank Center for Campus History. So we're going to be permanent. We're going to be around for years to come to do more of this historical research, to tell more of these stories. And one of our main goals is to work on this reinstallation of Sifting and Reckoning. So we're working on finding space on campus right now to do that, so that these stories can keep being engaged with, both as the physical exhibit, but, you know, also as the website. And we're exploring right now, like, what do we want to do in the future? So we're doing a bunch of listening sessions where we're asking people, how do you want to learn about this history, right? Like, do you want a podcast? Do you want a walking tour? Do you want more art exhibits? Like, we're trying to figure that out right now, which I think is kind of like the fun part of these projects.
I was so listening to a podcast about that.
Well, as soon as you guys make a decision and have want any kind of promotion or press, you're welcome to come back on the show, because this sounds very cool. We'll link all the website, both the Sifting and Reckoning, and also the Public History Project website. Casey, so thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. You're welcome back. Thank you so much. All right, when we come back, a turtle. A pretty big deal.
Oh, God.
This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. He is Greg Bach. And Mr. Pickles. Mr. Pickles had three baby tortoises.
Mr. Pickles.
Mr. and Mrs. Pickles.
Yes, Mr. and Mrs. Pickles. Sorry. And it's a pretty big deal.
I hate you.
Jane sent me this article from WPR, and all I could think of is my dad, who loves pickleball. Loves pickleball. My mom got him a pickleball shirt that says, I'm a pretty big dill on it. Oh, I don't think he wears it very often to his pickleball game.
I just got to say, it's good to see a couple not worrying about the climate crisis, having a couple kids on, you know, having some kids.
The tortoises aren't worried.
Yeah, they're not doomed.
And
tortoises.
They're way more susceptible to extinction than we are. Aren't
certainly,
they?
Certainly.
So, what was this is the Houston Zoo?
The Houston Zoo.
Yep.
The Houston Zoo. I don't know why this is news, but it's adorable, and we'll take it.
Well, Mr. Pickles is like 93 years old.
Oh,
he's an old,
and he's
turtle.
Got a younger wife.
Yeah. Oh, and his partner's only 53.
I know.
I mean.
And what's amazing is that in the 93 years that they have had Mr. Pickle at the Houston Zoo, This has never happened before.
Meaning that he's never had, this is his first offspring?
These are his first offspring.
Also, his first girlfriend.
Do you think, you know how the rule for humans is the appropriate age difference is if you half your age and add 7?
That sounds like a creeper's justification, but okay.
But I think it makes sense, because the thing about it, if you half your age, so if you're 20, you still have to date someone who's 17.
Yeah.
But it gets, that number gets
But I'm further. I'm 45 and I half that number.
And add 7.
Yeah, I still don't want to date someone that old.
Like 32?
I want someone more my age, who's my speed.
No, of course you want, but we're just talking about, in the appropriate age ranges. So like 50 is still not dating a 19-year-old. Like, what's his face? Leonardo DiCaprio dating that 19-year-old.
Is she 19?
I think so. Because I saw a great, it was, okay. I'm pretty sure she's not 21 yet.
Well, you know who's really amazing? Mr. Pickles.
Mr. Pickles. Mr.
And
Pickles.
Mrs.
So
Mr.
do you think
Mr.
that
Pickles.
Rule sticks for, because if he's 93 and she's 53, I think that works. If you split it by half and add
actually,
7.
Actually, yeah. So yeah, half
so they're in the clear.
Obviously, they're getting along well, and the age difference isn't making an impact.
And there's still romance in the bedroom.
Well, and also, I mean, because Tauruses live a really long time, so it's not like he's going to abandon these children.
He's like Grogu from The Mandalorian. He's basically a kid in tortoise years.
I actually think they pretty much abandon them at birth.
Is that how they go?
Turtles
just lay eggs and then you're on your own?
Yeah, they lay their eggs and they leave. And then it's up to the little turtles to make it to the sea, and otherwise, yeah, not good. But
there aren't these guys in a zoo, so no matter what, they're fine.
Well, they'll be reintroduced by their parents once they get to a certain
probably
age.
But what I had read about this story and a couple other, because this was all over the news last night on the national news. One of the zookeepers who takes care of Mr. and Mrs. Pickle, noticed that she was laying her eggs and collected them.
Yeah,
because otherwise they don't think they would have survived.
Yeah,
why?
They said the soil wasn't good. The Houston soil isn't the same as where they're native.
Madagascar or whatever.
Yeah. Madagascar. Yeah, where they're natives, the soil would be better for the eggs, whereas in Houston it would not be a good fit.
Oh.
So they saved them. Those individuals saved the pickle kids.
The pickle kids. Have they named them yet?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Oh, they did. Jalapeno. What were the other ones?
Gherkin.
And Dill.
That is great.
And you know what? I gotta say, it warms my heart to see in these divided days of our world, to see people not getting along, party divided, that we name these cute little tortoises after the good pickles and none of this
bread and butter
sweet crap.
The worst pickles.
Just, we can all
the
get
bread
together.
And butter pickles are just, I will spit that out.
They
I will
are,
spit it out if you serve me a bread and butter pickle.
And it's the worst when you go to a place and there's a little spread, a little charcuterie, and there's next to this pickle, and you're, I'm going to pop a pickle. And literally you chomp into sweetness, and you're like, well, I'm never coming back to this Shoney's again.
Yeah.
Are you disparaging sweet pickles?
Where have you been for the past 45 seconds?
Sweet pickles are a great thing.
Cut her off. Cut her mic. Cut her mic.
Justify yourself.
Yeah.
Justify myself.
What about sweet pickles is a delicious snack for you?
This is the rest of the show.
Okay. Grilled cheese with bacon and a couple sweet pickles. Perfect. It's perfect.
Wrong. Pass. Wrong. Next.
I'll go home. I mean, because a good dill pickle, I'll eat the whole jar.
Yeah.
Like Milwaukee baby pickles.
I got two
they're
jars.
They're not cheap either.
No.
They're like $5 or $6 a jar, and I will eat them in one sitting.
I have two jars at home unopened. I can't wait.
Do you like them really small or like a like?
I was just having this conversation the other day. I like a normal-sized Milwaukee dill pickle, but the great thing about the baby pickles, the little ones, you can have like 4 or 5 of them and there's still like 200 left in the
jar.
That's
true.
And you don't feel like such a pig.
That's true. Although there's basically no calories in them, so you should never feel like that
fair
much
point.
Of a pig.
I would,
pig.
Well, you also have the salt intake. But I would go, see, Jane, you're talking about your grilled cheese sammies and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I would go home today and if there was a jar of sweet pickles or sweet and sour, or whatever, the party pickles, I would sooner eat a dust ball off the floor than eat that just tragedy of a food.
That's fine.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to share with you.
Ever.
And
by the way, can we focus on the real segment, the pickle family? This is about The Pickle family.
Are they related to actress Christina Pickles?
Who's Christina Pickles?
She's an actress on television.
Wasn't there a Rugrats character named... No, Pickles. There was...
Tommy Pickles.
No, it wasn't Tommy Pickles. It was... Who was his girlfriend?
We've gone off course.
We're going to look it up.
Yep.
From Doug, the commercial, the show. All right. Also, when we come back, Joe Rogan's Anti-Woke Comedy Club. And it sounds awful. Big surprise. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together.
Welcome back to the last half hour of the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour of As Goes
Wisconsin. Good job.
Wisconsin.
You did a great job.
I think I finally have it memorized after it took me only a month.
Yeah.
After you first created it. Did you just pull that out of your brain that day?
Yeah, that's how my brain works.
Yeah.
Some doctors would say that's not the case.
It's stuck so far.
Yeah.
I don't know if the audience likes it or not, but
I don't
we like
care.
It.
I care about us.
That is the voice of Greg Bach, who does not care.
Care
about you, the audience.
I don't care. I don't care. I just like comedy.
Comedy. So Jane Mettner.
Yes.
And audience. Anyone can answer this question. Would you go to a comedy show where they took your phone for the duration of the show?
Okay.
And scanned your face? Does that sound like a fun time to start the evening?
Well, I have no problem with them taking my phone.
Okay.
What is the face scan for?
Oh, let's talk about
that. Let's talk about it. So I think, question 844-967-2789. Would you go to a comedy show where they took your phone and scanned your face in the attempt to be an anti-woke comedy club? So the protection of these comedians being able to say whatever they want. They need to take your phone and know who you are in case anything were to leak out that could damage the comedians. 844-967-2789. Greg Bach.
Yes.
You presented this. I did not know this was happening.
Oh, yes.
So you can give us the details of this new hot comedy club. Okay. As the comedy expert on this Wednesday show.
Little bit of backstory. During the pandemic, Joe Rogan, who has a very popular podcast I've never heard of, moved to Austin, and a great deal of comedians moved there too. A club from a space in New York closed down and then reemerged called The Creek in the Cave in Austin. And Austin's kind of becoming this new hotbed of comedy, but for a certain kind of comedy, which is anti-woke comedy.
Which is interesting because Austin... I mean, maybe it's just because Austin has gotten so big, period, because there's been so much growth there. But Austin is forever. I mean, it's like, keep Austin weird. And it's been a kind of liberal island in Texas.
I think what's happening is you're seeing a lot of people who were liberal who are starting to now go the way of don't tell me what to do. Now, I'm not saying that Austin is anti-woke, but like there is a piece of Austin now that's just turning into this, we'll escape to Texas where Texas is free and blah blah blah, but I don't want to live in Galveston, so I'll live in Austin because he can afford to. He's very rich, but there's always been this talk about him opening up his own comedy club, and he opened a place called Comedy Mothership, which is being hailed as an anti-woke comedy club where you get your phone taken away, which, like with Jane, I don't have so much a problem with that. It depends on the show. If I'm going to go see Chris Rock, I get that. If I'm going to a bowling alley, no, you're not taking my phone.
If I'm going to a dive bar's basement,
yeah, exactly.
You're not taking my phone.
Exactly. And it's in Austin. It's in a business district that needs some loving, so he bought the building, and it was an old Alamo draft house. And it's now home to this anti-woke comedy scene. And he has two rooms. One's called the Fat Man and one's called the Little Boy, which if you don't know are what they named the two atomic bombs. So there you go. But they scan your face, they take your phone, and it's home to these comedians. And from what I can glean from a Hollywood Reporter article that I read, like the first weekend they were open, it was packed with all these anti-woke comics. And one of them was Roseanne Barr. And my first thought was, first of all, it's $40 to get in.
Just for the ticket.
Just for the ticket, which in the Hollywood Reporter article, they're like, that's not too bad. I'm like, okay, you live in LA, obviously. And it's a 2-drink minimum. And the person said I paid $20 for both drinks, which actually isn't that bad. So $60.
Per person.
Per person, at least, to walk into a room where you have your phone taken away and your face scanned to listen to Roseanne Barr scream complain at you about how she's not relevant anymore and how she's not popular, even though she's working in a comedy club and she has a special that just dropped where literally it is an hour of her whining. There's nothing funny about it. It's just her upset about life and everything that makes her upset. You know, it's the typical thing of you snowflake, but then you're going to spend 60 minutes complaining about how nobody likes you or how everyone's against you. So, yeah, it's a very weird thing because it just opened, but there's already hints of like this is ridiculous.
So who else has played? Do you know any other names that? I guess two questions.
Yeah,
and you may not be able to answer. One, who else has been performing there? And two, are they selling out?
I'm sure it's selling out based on his name.
Curiosity.
And he has famous friends. So the opening weekend had a performance that's billed Joe Rogan and Friends, and included David Lucas, Ron White, Tim Dillon, Roseanne Barr, Tony Hinchcliffe, who, if you know comedy, those are pretty big names. And they're going to bring people. Those are all people who could do full weekends, sold out clubs, or do theaters all in that one space on one show. So my guess, it did sell out.
Yeah.
And so someone said that the over index on all the crowd was the three B's: bros, beards, and ball caps.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was just all dudes.
They said within seconds, the first comic taking the stage, a gay slur was thrown out, followed by jokes about trans people. The audience hooted. For an anti-cancel culture crowd, this is a new safe space. So that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safe space for anti-woke, which to me just says it's a safe space to make fun of those. To punch down. It should be called comedy punch down instead of mothership. A mothership in... makes me feel like you're being safed.
Or probed. Help.
Yeah.
But you know, when we're talking about Austin, you know who broadcasts from Austin, Texas, is Alex Jones.
Yeah.
I thought he was from Florida. Oh, that's Rush Limbaugh.
And that's the thing where I feel like in the growth of Austin as a city, it's just been all sorts that have flocked there versus it kind of keeping its liberal... roots.
Flavor.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is the liberal flavor back in the day meant, you know, people of all ilk could be there and have all these ideas and all this art. But now with all the construction and all the, I mean, it's one of the most expensive cities to live in the country. Now it is pushing people out and inviting this exclusive company.
Well, and Elon Musk is building his utopia just outside the
Oh yeah, Muskville.
Muskville. No. Well, it's Muskville. We were like Elon Land, Muskville, but it's also, what is it called? The Snail?
Eland.
Snail something, which is just stupid.
Snailbrook. It's going to be called Snailbrook.
Elon Musk.
Texter from the 262 says the biggest competition to this comedy club, Joe Rogan's, is the one operating in the office at Mar-a-Lago.
But I think one of the article that you had sent me, I think the interesting point is, yeah, like you said, it's a safe space. It's basically, because what cancel culture, it's accountability, right? Because no matter what you say,
mm-hmm.
like even in going back to the topic that we talked about earlier, and Ezra Klein had written this article on his opinion that you should still have kits and that it's still ethical to have kits. Following up to that, they had, in the same way that he was like, this is the question I get asked the most, not surprisingly then, there was a lot of letters to the editor based on his article. all of different opinions. People are like, you're wrong about this, right? And so no matter what, to put yourself out there in any public eye, and the bigger your platform, the more people who are going to weigh in on what you have to say. And if you're a comedian, there's some people who are going to like your jokes and they become fans. Mm-hmm. There's some people who don't. And there's some people who, there's someone who's always going to find something offensive. But the thing about putting yourself out there is ultimately, like, if the overwhelming feedback is it's offensive, that should be a clue to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is insulating themselves to basically just have, like, rant rallies with people who have signed up for this. And also, they can just, I mean, because I thought about this. I don't even think we've talked about the Chris Rock special.
No, we didn't.
Because also, that was another one that, from what I watched, like, wasn't funny. It was basically just him complaining. And I understand that most comedy comes from, what are the things that make you feel? Like, what's stupid, weird, you know, like, what makes you feel things? And you write jokes from those places. But ultimately, they still have to be jokes.
Yeah.
And not just you
ranting.
Complaining.
Yeah. With Chris Rock's special, he actually followed a joke structure versus what Dave Chappelle did.
I never watched Dave's newest special.
Yeah, it's not. None of them are really that interesting upon reviewing. But with Chris Rock's special, yeah, there was, my problem with Chris Rock's special is that it just wasn't that interesting. I feel like his thing now is taking very nuanced topics and saying, no, you're wrong. They don't deserve this kind of discussion. And it's black and white. That's it. Cut and dry. That's it. The only thing I really liked when he talked about was the part about his daughter, when he was talking about, like, raising his daughter to be a productive person in society and taking away privilege for a moment, her money and whatnot. And I thought that was an interesting, and I thought there was some funny stuff in there, but the whole Will Smith thing wasn't that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is that, Even if a great deal of people are telling you what you're doing is offensive, you're then just going to move to a space where the overwhelming people are going to be telling you what you're doing is brave and enduring freedom and all those things. So that's why you go to Comedy Mothership in Austin, so you can spout a bunch of trans jokes and probably anti-woman jokes, and, you know, and you're a hero. They lift you upon their shoulders and they celebrate you as, you know, as really one of the founding fathers, if you will.
But I think the whole face scan thing makes them an enormous hypocrites.
Well, it also, I mean, it kind of goes along with Joe Rogan's brand of, like, basic paranoia and weirdness. I mean,
but isn't he? I mean, there, a lot of these guys who follow, it's like, it's the anti-government red pill, which is the biggest irony since Matrix was written by two trans women. Like, anti-government, anti-surveillance guys who then, as long as they're doing it, though, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yes, it's always...
We're doing it for our protection.
That's right. But
if the government did it...
No.
I'm a private business. I can do what I want.
And you can.
Yeah.
And you absolutely can. Yeah. But I just... And it's interesting... What will be interesting is, if this is successful, which there is enough name recognition and famous people who will roll through that maybe it will be, is there enough of an appetite through this that this kind of comedy club will duplicate?
I don't. Well, there are already comedy clubs out there who peg themselves as, we don't cater to the PC mafia or blah, blah, blah. I think the problem with Joe Rogan's Comedy Club is so tied to his name. It's so niche with its name, with the room names, the face scanning, all that stuff. Everything it stands for as a business can't sustain, because you can't find that many really good anti-woke comics out there to sell out rooms. And eventually people are going to be like, well, okay, I'm not going to go there. Not because I'm woke, but because I'm bored with it. You know, and move on. I mean, that's, you can, with the Laughing Tap, our whole thing is not woke versus not woke. We just want to provide a space that has great comedy. Now, are our comedians punching down? I don't know. It could be debatable. But I would say on the whole, no, because we just find it's more inviting for people to feel like they're going to have a good time versus, oh, I might get insulted by a comic who has no compunction about insulting me.
Good word.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of the Laughing Tap, a place that will not scan your face.
I don't have a
And also not scan
money.
Your phone.
I don't have money.
We will talk about what's coming up at the Laughing Tap when we come back and wrap up the show. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Kristen Bry, he is Greg Bach, she is Jane Madnair, and we were just talking because tomorrow at 1, David Mandel, showrunner of Veep, writer on Seinfeld.
I'm nervous.
Right, I'm a little nervous too, but Greg was just already coming up. The creative juice is already
good.
Churning because we're going to pitch him some sitcom ideas.
Wisconsin-centric.
Don't say it out loud because I feel like you might have just got come up with a winner, but he's like, this is how I'm going to spend the rest of my day now. But speaking of fun times, what's coming up at the Laughing Tap this weekend, Greg?
Oh, there's tons of fun time ha-has coming up at the Laughing Tap. I don't know why I'm talking
like
that.
I wish you always talked like that.
Hey, welcome to David Plumpkin's Pumpkins. If it's not a plumpkin, it's not a pumpkin. I'm making that a thing, but I'm going to force Plumpkin's Pumpkins into our universe.
You just need to come up with the character, and we'll do a segment every Wednesday with David Plumpkin.
David Plumpkin's Pumpkins. So coming up is Chris Fairbanks. Chris Fairbanks has got a podcast with Karen Kilgariff. And if you know Karen Kilgariff, you may know her from My Favorite Murder. They have a podcast together Ooh. Called Do You Need to Ride Home? Or I think it's called Do You Need to Ride Home? He's very popular. Our early shows are sold out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And our late show on Saturday is very, I mean, last time I checked, half the tickets were sold. So if you want to go see him, actually, there are 7 tickets left for the late show.
Wow.
Yeah. So almost all the tickets are sold out. Get them while you can. He's very, very funny. Jane, do we have a clip?
I want them. I want kids. Isn't that weird to one day decide or realize? And I know it sounds weird, but I want them. And last year didn't. Now I'm like, yeah, I'll be on a plane playing peekaboo with some kid. I'll do it the whole flight. And the dad's like, quit playing with my kid. It's like, get out of this. This is not about you and I. It's about me and he. I'll do it anywhere. I'll talk to your kid. I don't care. And they come to me, man. I'll be in a mall just like, I'm stressed out. And they're like, hey, one at a time. Who the hell are you guys, right? It's easy. Cool shoes. Nice shirt. They're like, you're more fun than my dad. I'm like, all right. And then the dad comes along, like, oh, get away from my kid. It's like, come on. I'm not trying to molest your kid. He's a redhead. I just want to... Nah, I don't... Okay, let's be clear. Redheads grow up to be beautiful. Adults, right? But the kids, no thanks. I just... no eyebrows? Let's put him back. I don't think he's done baking. How's he gonna make expressions?
Do redheaded children not have eyebrows?
Very light eyebrows.
Really?
Very light eyebrows, yeah.
Who's the actor, I'm blanking on his name, who played Mitchell in Modern Family?
Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
I remember before, so he did a guest star on some show that I saw after he'd become famous for Modern Family. Yeah. And he had basically no eyebrows, and he looked so different and like so weird. And I was like, oh, they made you dye those things.
But it really makes a difference
Oh, yeah. Having eyebrows versus no eyebrows?
Eyebrows frame everything. And without them, this is why I think people have less empathy for goldfish, because goldfish have no eyebrows. And so it's very hard. Where cats and dogs do, they at least have eyebrow ridges, and it's easier to feel empathetic when they have eyebrows.
More deep thoughts by Shane.
Just watch me back away from this whole thing. Take your sweet and sour pickles and your eyebrowless. Yes.
Sweet pickles, eyebrow thoughts.
Eyebrows on fish. That's where. eyebrows on fish. Okay, we have a text from the 414. Just speaking about comedy in general, Al Franken has been hosting The Daily Show on Comedy Central this week. Not bad, not very extreme or offensive, just pretty refreshing comedy.
Don't ask me about him.
Oh, you don't like Al Franken?
He resigned in disgrace, and he did some terrible things as a person to other people, and I don't like this charm offensive he's been on for the past couple of years. And it just goes to show, honestly, it just goes to show, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or a conservative or a liberal or whatever, as long as you're a man, cancel culture does not apply to you. Sorry, it really bothers me. But what doesn't bother me, there's 7 tickets left at the Laughing Tap for the Late Show for Chris Fairbanks this weekend. 3 shows, and we're looking forward to having him. This is his return. He's been here before.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he's a real nice guy. We really like him a lot, and he's just so funny, and just, yeah, it's going to be a great time.
And when are you performing? Because that's coming up,
I'm not performing anymore, unfortunately. Oh. Yeah, due to circumstances beyond my control, I will not be performing next month at the Laughing Tap, but still come out and see the shows. Hurry Kundabolu, 5 shows. Tickets are already starting to sell.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a great time. This is a couple days before his YouTube special drops. And
I feel like we need to start promoting
further in advance.
Further in advance. Because I feel like this is like the 4th or 5th week in a row where we've talked about who's coming this weekend, and shows are either sold out or close to selling out. So maybe we'll do both.
It's great for me.
We'll do 2. I know it's great for you.
It's a good problem to have.
Well, next week is Ian Abramson.
Okay.
That'll be great. We're going to have 3 shows as well. He's been on Conan. He had his own show on Comedy Central called 7 Minutes in Purgatory. Very unique. I'm just going to say this right now. Very unique comedian. Very cerebral comedian. It's just short of performance art, but it's still very funny. But it's still very, we wouldn't have him if he wasn't funny. He's very funny. But he thinks on a different level when it comes to comedy. But I am a huge fan of him.
And what's his name, Greg?
Ian Abramson.
Ian Abramson.
He paints a little mustache on his with a marker, which I found out later was fake, and I felt very lied to. But whatever.
He just always has a little fake mustache on.
I don't know if he does that all the time now. That used to be kind of his calling card, but I would be surprised if he has it. Definitely, if you go to laughingtap.com. The picture of him has the mustache drawn on his face.
And you thought it was real.
I thought it was real. I'm not very smart, okay? That's why my comedy is not geared towards very smart people. It's geared towards people who are like, I love high C, like Ecto Cooler and the show Muppet Babies. That's my niche audience. That's my demographic right there.
That was a good show.
It was a great show.
Muppet Babies.
Bring it back. Yeah.
All right. Well, that will about do it for us today. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
We did it.
Stick around for the Chad Holmes Show, because at 2:15, the Wausau Performing Arts Foundation director, Sean Wright, is going to be there. And at 3:15, Wausau West hockey coach, BJ Brandt, is going to talk about how the school consolidation could affect sports programs. And then on Dueling Tangents, Luke Mathers has William Walter joining for Wednesdays with Will. This has been As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for texting. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow. If you have ideas for Wisconsin sitcoms, email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. I can talk. Thank you. Goodbye. If I appear
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.